Welcome, unprofessionals. Throw away your calculators and throw out those math textbooks because we have a math coach with us today. I am your co-host, Shane Lawrence.
And I'm Mealy. How you doing? And we've got with us Brian Hain, rhymes with rain. And that's where the which falls on the plains in Spain, as we all know.
Mainly, okay. Yes.
All right. Before you even talk, I'm just going to go randomly off to a tangent because I can't not do it. So
what?
A long time ago, we all watched the George Jetson show, or we call it the Jetsons. We don't call it the George Jetson show here. But anyway.
It's okay. It's
and so there was an episode where George Jetson was going to be like on TV or whatever. And so instead of teaching them to say the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain, which I think is like Eliza Doolittle thing, he said the ants in France dance mainly on the plants. Okay. And that's a bit of Jetson trivia for you there. I remember very little bit about the Jetsons, but that one forever stuck in my head.
I'm disappointed. I thought it would have been like more spacey, like, I don't know, like the, you know, the scars on Mars.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Oh. There should have been the stars on Mars would have been better.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, welcome, Brian. glad to have you here. And welcome, unprofessionals, in case Shane didn't already do that. But anyway, we're all welcome.
I did. Okay. I was very welcome.
Thank you. You're welcome and all that.
Yeah.
So so we like to start off by talking about education because it's sort of an education podcast. So tell us, what does education and being an educator mean to you?
Man, it goes all the way back to Jaime Escalante and Stand and Deliver and really helping kids realize their own potential and abilities. Has been where I've come from into teaching. I mean, I originally was, you know, my undergrad was in business and computer programming, and then I fell into teaching. And so when I started substitute teaching, just because my early 20s life was not going anywhere, I realized that I really, really loved it. And that part of like, building relationships and inspiring people like the mm-hmm. students that are in yeah. the room yeah. that became the heart of what I wanted to do and be and become as an educator. So that's kind of like informed my practice since the day one.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Excellent. When I think of Stand and Deliver, like the only reason I ever watched that film was because of Battlestar Galactica.
That is so weird.
Because the guy who plays Jaime Escalante is the commander in.
Yeah. Edward James Olmos.
Yeah. So that's how I kind of became an Olmos fan. And then I was like, I'm going to watch other stuff he's been in. So, but that was a very good movie. I think it's one of the.
So you,
doesn't
you didn't
get
know him
enough.
From Miami Vice? Or you didn't watch Miami Vice?
I'm sorry, Grandpa. Like when Miami Vice was on, I was like under the age of, it was in the 80s, right?
Yes, it was the 80s.
Yeah, I was born in 79. Right?
Okay, you're so, a whippersnapper. Okay.
Yeah, I was too busy watching like Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, I think, at that point.
Okay.
I want to watch the Drug Vice Squad break down, you know, some doors.
I didn't watch a ton of Miami Vice. I wasn't like it was I was kind of like, but I watched some. But
yeah, I'm still not sure how old you are. I'm not because you're like, "Oh, you remember that jazz from the 1930s?" And I'm just like, "No." So I really
remember Grover Cleveland's inauguration speech. It was awesome.
That guy. Well, it's now that I learned that I'm the same age as the co-host.
Yes.
Also born in 79.
Okay. There you go. So I'm assuming you have not seen Miami Vice, and we're not talking like the Colin Farrell Miami Vice.
No,
sure,
no, no. And that movie was kind of weird, but no, I no, haven't watched it. I was too young. I cut my teeth on the Star Trek.
There you go.
Well, Miami Vice was basically CSI Miami, except they took themselves more seriously. It was not a dark comedy like CSI Miami, which I don't know if you guys are CSI Miami fans, but I watch it as a dark comedy. So
yeah, I never was really into the CSI thing, but I'm like Brian, like I'm there with you on the Star Trek thing. Like Friday nights in our household growing up were sacred. It's like we weren't allowed to watch TV during mealtime, but Friday nights, it's like we order pizza, turn on the TV, watch Next Generation. Man, that was
oh great. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Just finished Picard. Anyway, we're going to tangent off onto different non-education.
Welcome to unprofessional Star Trek.
Yes. Now I do love Next Generation. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of that as well. I mean, Brent Spiner truly like his acting, like really, you just like actually believe he is an android. Like you can't not believe he's an android. But anyway,
I haven't watched that season yet. I want to know how they justify him getting old. But anyway, I'll get there. Anyways, yeah. Hey, speaking of Star Trek,
so what is an back to education, boys and girls. So what is an opinion that you've changed in regards to education? You know, as we grow as educators, we come in sometimes with our idealism or whatever we have from when we were being educated. And what's something that you said, okay, I have completely thrown this out, or I've made a pretty big shift in how I view this part of education?
So the background answer to this question is that my mom is Asian. She's Korean. She's a Korean lady. She's a Korean tiger mom. Okay. And so for me, I remember distinctly getting a 4.0 in my eighth grade year. And she looked at the A- and said, "Why are you failing this class?" And I had to go to tutoring. She called my science teacher and then made me go to tutoring to retake the one quiz that brought me from an A to an A-. My friends were in there going like, "What the heck are you doing in here? Like, we're the ones failing." And I just like had my head in my hands and I just told the teacher, "Just give me the dang quiz." Cause I aced the test. I mean, you know, but like I had to go back and do the quiz. And so I don't know why that didn't come back to me when I got to the classroom, but my first year teaching, I was the guy that got there like an hour and a half before school started, just panicking to make sure everything was ready. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed until like the kids left at 3 and I stayed till like 6:30 because I had to grade everything, every question from everything they did. Like I had to grade it and score it and like have little things and comments on everything. All 150 children in my first year across 3 grade levels. I just had to make sure. And I mean, I know that I think our original interactions on Twitter started when I saw a lot of your ungrading and realized that I've come to realize that much like Whose Line Is It Anyway, the points don't matter. And they're just there to hold the room together. Like,
right. Yes, exactly. It's all Monopoly money, baby. It's all Monopoly money.
And then I started reading at the end of last summer, I started reading Building Thinking Classrooms, and one of the quotes that Peter Lilliedahl makes in that book, are teachers gathering points or are we gathering data? Mm-hmm. And it's like, am I really trying to find out and give feedback after the fact, like on an assessment of what students are trying to learn? Or should I try to really be focusing my energy on giving them feedback in the moment as they're doing the learning? And like, and which one of those two things is actually going to, you know, help the student understand more of what they're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. I know I'm being redundant, but you know what I mean? Like that's the part that I've come to realize and trying to find ways to give feedback in the moment and make students realize that their grade doesn't define who they are, which I know that my mom, if she's listening to this, is just tearing her hair out and screaming that is not the case.
Right.
But I love you, mom. But no, that really, really, that grades don't matter. And they're just there to hold the room together. And
they are, you know what I mean? And it's a very, I feel sometimes it's this analogy I'll use, like, I feel like I walk through a giant spider web of grades, and I'm still, as I'm trying to navigate, finding little pieces that are still attached to me. Because I'll be helping a student, and there'll be like a part of me, like this little devil on my shoulder, is like, "That's cheating." You know what I mean? You shouldn't show them that now. You know what I mean? Like they're actually doing an assessment, and they're like, "Well, how do you do this problem?" And then I'm like, I take like a couple minutes and I show them actually how to do the problem right then. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and it feels like, oh my God, but it's, you know, the mindset of like, but it's the test. You can't tell them how to do it when they're taking the test. I'm like, oh, like, is my goal for them to like, to gotcha? Or is my goal for them to learn this piece of content that right now they want to learn? You know what I mean? Sadly, the only reason they want to learn is because they've been indoctrinated and the leverage of the test is weighing heavily on them. And that's why they care now versus like 3 days ago when you were, you know, teaching it in a lesson. But I don't care. You know what I mean? You want to learn? I help learn. Let's learn, baby. You know what I mean? And if it means you get like a 95 instead of an 85 because I helped you literally while you were taking the test, I don't care. Like those 10 points, I, you know what I mean? I go to my bank account today and I'm like, oh, I'm down 10 points. I gave them away. Like, no, no. I just print points whenever I feel like it. I've got more. You need 100 points. They're over here. I got some. So it is. It's weird to just like,
once I wonder like, if we should just,
once you're through the matrix, you still, it's still hard to like go, But
well, I'm thinking like, I wonder if we could blame the video game industry at least in part for this. I'm sorry, I'm thinking very divergently at the moment, but I'm just like envisioning, you know, well, like when you're playing video games.
I love blaming the video game industry.
Well, yeah, let's do it. It's, yeah, there, it's the cause of all so many social ills, but. But I mean, the fact is like so many games are based on points and what, I mean, they don't mean anything. They don't do anything other than say, I have more points than you do.
Yes.
What are they? Right. But I mean, I wonder if in some way that does reinforce the whole idea of like, you know, craving points, which are just these things.
Yes. Yes.
I think that like realizing that everything is formative and nothing is summative at all. Like what's the right. summation? Like what's the end? Like the end goal is to be a good human. It's right. It's not to know how to quadratically factors, you know, quadratic equations or something. Like that's right. not the end goal. No. And so then I always quote video games in my, when I was teaching in my room a lot, and I quote it to teachers now, as I'm talking to them about math education, is like, you watch students play video games and they fail repeatedly over and over again. Mm-hmm. They do not stop. They get mad, but it empowers them to continue to try. They think in the moment, they're thinking and they're reflecting and they're like, yeah, so I did that wrong. So next time I'm going to jump earlier. And then they just do it again. And they'll do it 100 times. And this comes from an ADHD kid who spent like 14 hours a day on break playing, you know, video games because that's what motivated me. Yeah. And having students see that connection to like, oh, well, then that's kind of school. Right. Like I need to keep failing and not be frustrated because this is my brain learning how to do this stuff. And if every single piece of thing of response that we have from them is graded, then all of a sudden everything becomes summative to them, and no one wants to fail,
right?
And like ever, like, right. you don't want to walk out of a class today. Well, I failed 15 things. No, it's like you got closer to understanding something, and you might have died 15 times on the video game level that we're on. Yes. But can you walk out here and be successful at what we did? Maybe. I think that's vastly more important.
Maybe when students reach success, though, in math, maybe if you just like blew up a car or something when they win, that would be better, right? So it's like, congratulations, you passed your quiz. That would, you know, I would, you know, my kids would work real hard, I'll bet you. If they could, like, you know, if they got a top mark on like an essay or something and I just blew something up.
Yeah.
Okay, now that
we're working at that district.
Yeah. A little expensive, maybe.
And I always try to zoom out because it's hard as a teacher. It's hard as a human to like, you know, you look down. Well, let's look back up. You know what I mean? And if every day as teachers we were being graded and someone was like evaluating us every single day, I mean, that would be the worst. You know what I mean? And you would be just constantly full of anxiety. You would be constantly trying to like stress. Okay, well, oh man, I got a 65 yesterday because, you know, I put these papers in the wrong spot, or I misspoke, or whatever it is, you know, and all this kind of stuff. Where it's like, no, we are continually trying to let's just learn, you know what I mean? And some days are going to be better than others, and some days are going to be, and some things we're going to learn, we're gonna forget, you know what I mean? And it's and that's okay. So so how has that actually concretely affected your practice? What have you done differently and with this saying, hey, grades aren't that important, like, you know, we didn't kind of get into, you kind of off air, you talked about where you were in terms of what you're doing in the education world. So kind of give us that and kind of how it's actually affected your practice.
So I started listening to you guys like at the beginning of last school year. It's okay. Kind of like, well, I don't know how I just stumbled onto EduTwitter is a weird place, right? I mean,
it is.
So I stumbled onto you guys, started listening, and I heard an episode on ungrading and or something. And you guys talked a little bit about that. And with a guest whose name now escapes me. Yeah. And I thought to myself,
it doesn't matter. I'm the important one here. Okay.
But then, in that moment, I thought to myself, like, holy crap, like the points really don't. Like, so how could I make it not matter in my class? Mm-hmm. And so I remember I told my students, I'm going to try something weird on the next test. And they were like, oh no, Haynes off the deep end again. And I was like, okay, look, I always give their notes anyway, because in real life, no one ever goes like, hey, show me that you know this thing and turn off your phone, go into a room, lock yourself in a
Oh,
closet, write it down on
yeah.
a sheet of paper, and then hand it to
Right.
me. And so I'm like, here's your notes, here's everything. And then I said, okay, look, I'm gonna give you the test, I'm gonna take away your pencils, and I want you all to talk to each other.
Right.
Just look at the test, find out what you don't know, and everybody knows that William knows how to do number two. Go find William and get him to explain it to you.
Right.
And they looked at me like, are you what? And I was like, don't do it. And so they all got up and they started talking to each other. And the conversations that I had that they were having in that moment with each other were so much better than what I was doing as a teacher. I felt like kind of like the emperor's clothes, right? I was like, oh no, let me put on my bathrobe.
Yes.
But they were all talking about and really trying to dive into how to understand how to do this. And then I said, okay, everybody back to your seats on your own, take out a pencil, use your notes, and show me what you know. And so they did that. And then I collected it from them. And instead of going through like my first year self and grading everything and circling what they did wrong and writing a sentence or three feedback on every little thing that they did incorrectly, I just circled it if it was wrong and checkmarked if it was right. And then the next day, I gave them back the test. And they were
Right.
like, wait, you're done grading it? And I'm like, well, you wait. And so I said, now look over it, look at all the circles. Find people that have check marks for circles. Again, no pencils. I don't want them to copy the work down and
Right.
just have a conversation. And then they all of a sudden the freedom that was like in on their faces at that moment was just mind-boggling. And they talked to people and they did all of and they wrote it down. And then I just asked them to reflect, like, what did you learn in your conversations and how would you not make this mistake in the future? And so they all did that. And then when they came up to me, I kind of didn't have to grade it because I knew that they found the right answer, right? It's not
Right.
about the answer, it's about the process. And
Exactly.
so I asked them, they came to me and handed me the sheet of paper. I had my little, paper grade book roster. And I was like, so Shane, what did you get on your test? And the kid just looked at me and was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, no, well, I mean, you got like four or five wrong the first time through, but now everything is correct. Did you learn something? What do you think you would get? And the shocking thing was, all of them were like, F.
Yeah.
I got a D. And they were very scared to say it. And it was,
Right.
and I was like, nah, man, I'm gonna give you an A. Like, you showed me that you understand this. And look at
Yeah.
this. You even told me what you learned here. That's fantastic. And they
Right.
were like, and then I looked at them and I'm like, are you okay with that? And they said, yeah. And they were genuinely nervous to say that they were
Yeah, they
okay
feel like they're stealing. You know what I
to
mean?
earn an A. Yeah. And
Right.
then so
Yeah, it's like
I go,
the owner of the store just told you, just take the pizza. This one's on me. You've been a good customer, but I didn't pay you. It's I own the store. It's I'm giving you the pizza. Just go. You know what I mean? I'm not like some employee that's trying to do it on the side. I got this. You know what I mean? You sure
and
you
so
can give me the pizza? I'll be all right. Okay. You know?
and so then I become a coach and I get hired. Like I kind of applied as a whim to like a coaching position at a different site, got interviewed, thought that I bombed the interview. Like I really thought that I bombed that interview. And then I get the call back a couple of days later and I'm like, well, okay, I guess this is my life now. And then before the school year started, I get an email from the 7th and 8th grade math team lead. And he was like, hey, come join us. We're just gonna like hang out at someone's house and talk about the next school year. And I'm like, well, that's my job now. So yes. And they were like, how do you grade tests? And I'm like, okay, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. And I gave them what I just told you. And their minds and their faces were just as blown as that
Yes.
kid. And they were like, but what did it do to your students? And I was like, I can only tell you that they tried harder. Their notes became unbelievably more meaningful to them. The conversations that they had in the class, they were trying to find out who knew what and then learn from them. And it just became no longer really about me. It was much more about like networking with their classmates. And then they were like, okay. And to their credit, they were like, all right, well, then we'll do it. We'll try it. And so they
Wow.
tried it.
That
They tried it.
that's shocking, right? That there you landed in a good spot, I'm telling you, because there's a lot of people that be like, yeah, that's good for you, but I'm not playing that game. Yeah, go ahead.
And so they were like, okay, we'll try it. And so a lot of them, they tried it, and to their credit, they're still doing it, and it's the end of the school year. And it's like they're like, I mean, they have traditional quizzes along the way too, but for some of their tests, they've all done it like me, and like, well, not like me, but like that. And they've seen the value in the conversations that engenders within their students, and in the kind of like subtle mind shift that it makes in their classrooms. And so it's crazy. Like they,
Have you gotten
I
any pushback from like your, I'm assuming you as Atossa, you work for the district now, right?
don't. So I work at a site, and I'm a TOSA for the site. So I'm a math coach at my middle school, and there are other math coaches at the other schools. And then there's like a curriculum coordinator person at the district, and she's like our coach. So I
But
really, it's the admin that needs to
okay.
buy into my craziness.
And they're okay with and they have, apparently. Or are
So
they
the
just kind of hands
principal,
off? What's
oh no,
that?
the principal used to be the vice principal of the first school I worked at in the district that I would now work in, like 11, 12 years ago, I started. And so she knew me and my wife when we first started dating, and now years later is now my principal. And so she's kind of like, yeah, man, go do crazy. Just and that is the most empowering thing that any teacher can hear is their admin is like, yeah, bro, I got your back. Just do you. And if it crashes and burns, then I'll be there to help you pick up the pieces. But if it flies and is fantastic, then go do it. And to have that as my backing from my admin team is unbelievably empowering. And the teachers there feel that as well. And so to say that I landed in a good place, like I really do feel like in a lot of ways I've won the lottery at my school site right now, and hope that it keeps, like I hope everybody stays, you know what I mean? So
Well, you've got that sort of the history there. I mean, I don't imagine that had they hired some person off the street, so to speak, that they didn't know. I mean, I don't know if your admin would be like, yeah, go do crazy, right? So
it also helps that like those the math teachers and I was I mean I still am a math teacher, but like the math teachers at the site, they all know me from trainings from before. District trainings where everyone has to get together, those days where you have to pull together sub plans and end up at a building with like 35 other math teachers, and they drill you on things that you probably won't use in your classroom, but they're required to learn
But
anyway
you get
or
a
have
lot
been
of handouts,
repackaged and
though.
renamed. But they all know me from those, and so they've heard me and my thoughts. And so it's not like I was coming to them cold. They knew a little of my crazy, but then I sat down with them before the school year, and they all kind of went like, "Oh."
This guy's
So,
like nuts.
yeah. So I've got two pieces. I think one that we want to make sure that we emphasize. How critical do you think the no pencil piece is, and how much? What do you do when kids go, I can't remember it. I'm talking to him, but I need to write down what they said so that I can do that. And so how do you navigate that?
So I think that the no pencil piece for me was critical because I didn't want little Brian to go over to Will and say, give me your paper, I'm just gonna write down the answer. Because that's not thinking. Really what I wanted was there to be a conversation about what it was that I didn't understand, that Brian didn't understand, and what it is that William knew to help me understand. And the process of that conversation is what I wanted to capture on the page. And so I told the students, if you can't remember exactly what to do, tell me what you think you need to do and why you didn't remember it. That kind of idea, right? And so it became much more of a dialogue between the students themselves and then also with me when they came up. And there's where the I mean, horrible letter grades, right? There's where the B's, the C's, and the D's all came from. The B's and the C's is they were like, I know I knew how to do this. If I had another chance, I could. And then, yo, man, you want to come in when I got tutoring and then just show me how to do it? I'll give you some more problems. We can have a conversation. You can go. And they're like, wait, I can get an A on this? Of course. Who cares? I want you to know it. Show me that you know it. So the pressure to do it in that moment was no longer there. And what was being valued was the process of learning it and not the end goal. Like, I mean, it's funny because then the students that knew how to do what they knew how to do, the second day they came up and they just put their paper down and were like, I get an A. Because they have all the support. But then how empowering is that as a student to just know?
Right.
And then to turn around in that moment when all of your other classmates are coming to you and be like, and it's not me putting them on a pedestal, it's the classmates going like, okay, help me, help me. I do not know how to solve for X here. Like, what do you mean reciprocal? Like, and then
Right.
they're telling it. And then though, like what, again, it's placing value where you want the students to learn how to be better people, as opposed to like placing value on an end goal to strive towards a high scoreboard. Like, what are you trying to be, the valedictorian, or are you trying to be a human? Like,
You heard it here first, folks. Valedictorians are not humans.
That's they all,
the
all,
one
they
one of my
barely.
favorite stats about valedictorians actually is they've done studies and found that valedictorians are less likely to be successful in life.
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go.
And when by successful, do you mean they have like failed marriages
No, I
and
mean in terms of careers.
some kind of addiction? What's that?
No, they have less successful careers because valedictorians tend to be rule followers. They tend to be less creative thinkers. They tend to kind of just like color inside the lines, and so they don't take as many chances. So they have found
And
the that.
some of them don't have they're so focused on the academics, I think, that maybe they lose some interpersonal skills and as well.
It's like every year when the valedictorian, like there's they do it by vote at our school. It's a
Oh.
combination of vote and like, grades and stuff. So it's always a highly academically achieving person. But every year there's always someone who I know is going to get picked. And then there's always someone who I wish would get picked because they're the interesting
Yes.
one. And of course they never get it. So, which just drives
I
me nuts.
saw
But
this.
anyways.
Someone said this a while back. I don't even know. It's some random tweet that somebody. I don't even know if they were in education or not. And I think this could be an absolutely terrible idea as well. But I like the concept to some degree. They said not only should the valedictorian give a speech, but the lowest ranked kid in the school should give a speech. You know what I mean?
That would be,
The only
I mean, that would be
drawback to
interesting.
that is, well, that sounds entertaining. Is like that kid is not going to prepare a speech, most likely. You know what I mean? There's a good chance that that kid doesn't take that seriously. I like the idea of having someone who is unacademic giving a speech, but I think if you go all the way to the bottom, you might have just like a bunch of expletives and I don't know what going on. Go ahead.
What if instead of the lowest kid, it was the kid that everybody agreed, students, staff, faculty, admin agreed, made the most growth? Like,
Okay.
what would that do if we just started valuing the students that grew the most? Like,
Yeah.
what would
Yeah.
those speeches sound like other than like, so I know how to get A's and I know that we're going to be successful. And when I am your doctor and your radiologist, and I am looking down on you for falling off that ladder because you are unsuccessful because of your life. I mean, how much of a difference would that make if that was the person that we're constantly putting in front as the most sought after model of thinking kind of idea?
That would be cool. Yeah.
Oh,
But
so, something to
go
bring to the
ahead,
admin on
Shane.
Monday morning. Man, I'm not used to being the one introducing the rabbit trails, though. I'm kind of lost now, Mealy. What do we do? Well, you're the rabbit trail guy.
What? Who's the rabbit trail guy? You are?
You are.
Oh, I are. Yes.
You
So,
am.
did you want another rabbit trail?
No, I didn't want to. I want to find our way back to the core conversation we've been having.
Oh,
I just grabbed some random
cool.
thing from
Okay. Well,
Brian.
then look at the bullet points, you big goof on the show doc, okay? The show doc, okay, kids. Okay. It's got bullet points, okay? And back when I was a little more
Goodness.
attention to detail, I would put like parentheses
Oh,
with like
I okay, I got it. I got it. I got it. I got it. I got it.
You got
I
it?
get us back.
Oh,
Because here's a question I actually had before we kind of went down that valedictorian path. Is, I mean,
okay.
we're talking about, kids coming to you and they grade themselves and everything else. Like, I'm starting to do this. I'm Johnny come lately here. But I've been doing it in my art class, which has been a lot of fun. Like, well, I mean, now when kids hand stuff in, I don't mark it right away. I ask them, like, first I'm like, well, what do you think? And they're like, I think it's an 8 out of 10. Like, no. I don't want numbers. Tell me what you think about it. What do you like about it? What do you think you could improve on? That kind of stuff. And we have a conversation about it, which is great. But every now and then I've got a kid who, we have the assignment that we're supposed to do, and they just take some paint and kind of go, right? And they just kind of throw it on the canvas or whatever, and it's garbage. I mean, it's garbage, right? Yes. And then I'm like, so what do you like about, oh, I like the colors and this and da-da, and, you know, very, very like sarcastic. And like, well, so, okay, what would you give for a grade? Like 10 out of 10. I'm like, I mean, for me, I'm just like, no, no. Like, you are free to mark your stuff, but no. That's not okay. Like, how do you deal with that, Brian? Like, when you've got a kid who you know is
I've got
like,
an answer to that too, but I'm gonna let Brian go first.
Yeah, well, Brian's the guest. Well, we should let him talk.
I know. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I had a student last year who was that kid in my math class. Yeah. And would come up to me with an empty sheet of paper with every single question circled. Yeah. We refused to get up and talk to everybody else. Mm-hmm. And he'd just look at me and he'd be like, "Well, if you want to tell me what I can tell you what my grade is, then I got an A."
Yeah.
All right. Well, show me on the paper how you demonstrated that you learned or understand anything that we did.
Mm-hmm.
I see nothing. I know podcasts. I'm showing a blank sheet of paper. Yes. Imaginarily, but like you know, and so then that student like took a step back and was like, "So I'm like, all right, so I could take a picture of this and email it to your guardians and tell them like this is an A, right? And they'd be proud. They're gonna shove it right up on the you know the refrigerator, and they're gonna be like, this is my son's best work. And he was like, oh, you're gonna email my parents? I'm like, well, I can. Do you want me to? Do you think I should? And I know I'm sarcastic and that's a downfall of myself, but
no, that's
how I turned it on its head is to say, so you're the people who you value most in your life, your parents or your guardians or whoever's raising you and putting a roof over your head and those nice shoes on your feet that I can't afford are going to be so proud of this work that they're going to think that's a 10 out of 10 A.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that student was like, okay, so then I got to actually show something. And so it varies vastly, I think, from student to student, but the key concept that we've all talked about was literally just having the conversation with the learner.
Yeah.
I mean, have a conversation with the people that you're evaluating. If you're not having those conversations, like, then what, you're just grading at them. You're like, you are worth this much. You know?
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know. I can't ask you a question about what it is. I just got a B minus. I don't know why I didn't get an 83, like, or an 84. Like, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. Like, what are you placing value on in your classroom? And so that was how I tried to change that conversation, because it was all about, again, I realized more and more that it's about having conversations with students as they're learning.
Yeah.
Than it is about like, you have a 9.
Yes, exactly. I know.
I release you.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you say that, it's oh my goodness. It comes down to I think of like when we rate people's looks, you know what I mean? And when you say that, like you say like you're like, you know, you're an Albany 9, but you're a New York City 7. You know what I mean? And so that happens as well, right? Like, you know what I mean? When we're quote unquote grading kids, you know what I mean? And their work, you know what I mean? I've definitely been guilty of that when I've had kids transfer in, you know what I mean? And they were like, and it was an honors versus regular thing, you know what I mean? And this kid's like, well, I was in honors, da 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 da. I'm like, yeah, you were in honors at that school over there where like the literacy rate is 50%. So congratulations on being the you know,
big fish in a small pond.
You know, the skinniest fat person, the prettiest ugly person, or the tallest short person, whatever. Take that back because it shouldn't say that. But you know what I mean. Gosh. You know what I mean. But so anyway, but. I'll kind of tell you how I've handled situations like that in myself, Shane. And there's two ways. There's one where you just go, I don't care. Just you got a 10, you want the 10, go ahead, you know, and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other one is that I have, and I have this conversation a lot where I say, and I have it both to class and with individuals. I go, here's what I want. I want when you determine your grade and you put down what you think you should get for this assessment or whatever, I said, I want you to think, you know, is your conscience going to be clean? I don't want you later on today go, hey, I stole 10 points from Mealy. I also don't want you to go home and go, you know what? I didn't, you know, I worked really hard and you're only paying me minimum wage. I should be making this much. And so I don't want them to feel that they took something from me or that I took something from them, and that this is what you have, you know, quote unquote, deserve, earn. And we, and in the context of this is all silliness and whatever, but also if we have to put a number on it, can we both have a clean conscience about this number? And then the last piece is, and this happened to me last semester, you know, this kid who, integrity was really a big value of his. You know, he said to me in the conversation, he says, I think other kids in this class are giving themselves grades that are too high. And so I'm like, do you mind if I share that with the class? You know what I mean? And he's like, sure, no problem. I go, hey, Joe says, you guys are giving yourself grades that are too high, you know? And then like I said, you know, I need to have more of a classroom discussion, but you can have those classroom discussions and go, okay, you know, you don't have to like, if you're great, if you want what you're giving yourself to be private, I respect that and honor that. But if you want to like talk about it and whether or not, you know, if you are willing to share it, why you think this is that and that is the other and all of that. And we can just have, we can have that conversation, because at that point we're talking about what you've learned, what you need to learn, why you haven't learned it, how well you learned it. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of know it? Could you explain to somebody else? Could you duplicate it? Did you just hold on to it for a second? And like 2 seconds from now, you won't actually know it. You know, where's the depth of the understanding and all that. So we can have those good conversations that like can feed off the silliness of the numbers and the letters that is grading. So yeah.
Wow. I think we should just start calling this the ungrading podcast instead of
I mean, it could be an ungrading podcast. The more I get into it, the more I want to like, you know, the more I like it and the more fun it is to me and the more I think it's good for students. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna
ask this question, Shane. Okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So we're gonna get the next bullet point, boys and girls, if you're following along at home. All right.
So organic. read it like really slowly and awkwardly too. Like
yes.
Maybe get some words.
What
wrong.
Is some thing you do that is not
no, stop it.
Taught in education classes that you think would help new teachers?
That is dedication to a bit right there.
Thank you. Commit, baby. Commit.
All the way. I don't know. I wrote some stuff. I think education is,
by the way,
about...
hit rewind and like play it like a couple times because you probably have no idea what I just said the way I read that.
What is something okay, so you
that,
do that is not
a rewind button
education
on your podcast
classes.
App? Go ahead, Brian.
So you asked me, what is something I do that is not taught in education classes that I think would help new teachers?
That's kind of what I said, sure.
That's like my job now. It's like I'm help. There's a new teacher at my site, and I'm helping them. And so, like, I think that telling them that education is about enabling the freedom of your students, and mm-hmm. not about telling them what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
I know that at some point during my master's degree, I read "Teach to Transgress" by bell hooks, but I can't tell you what the book is about. But the title alone, right? "Teach to Transgress." What does that mean? Like,
yes.
You're teaching against the norm. So then. Mm-hmm. If as educators, we look at the American education system, if I look in Southern California where I teach and I look at the math scores, we're not doing well. And so then, if our default defense is, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing because gosh dang it, I think it's going to help the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you take a step back and you look at where we're being measured, unfortunately we are as teachers and schools are being measured. As districts, we're not doing the job. So then we have to disrupt what the status quo is. Mm-hmm. Like, be a disruptor of norms.
Yeah.
Be reflective in your teaching and think, what does the value need to be? Where are you putting the value in your room? Mm-hmm. And if you are really disrupting what you think are the failures of the current educational model, then... in the best way possible. Don't just go in and start throwing things around the room and saying, we're going to throw paintballs and learn math. Like, that'd be fun. But, you know, right. Like really intentionally say, what can I do to help the students be better learners and mm-hmm. know that they understand things?
Yeah.
And so, spoiler for those that have not watched the last episode of Ted Lasso.
Ah!
There is a segment where Jamie, the character Jamie Tart, says, don't play through me. Play to me. And like, don't play to me, play through me, right? Like, yeah. He says, I can't do the accent. That turns Scottish. But that's what it's about. It's not teaching through and like
it's not teaching at
and yeah. to students, but letting them, but teaching through them and with them. I think that's the biggest piece, like being there with the kids in your room, mm-hmm. and letting them enable themselves and giving and crafting those opportunities, I think is where it's at. Not let me get every dang kid to not talk at all and be silent, sit in your dang seat. I assigned it to you last week. Why do you not know where you're sitting? Why are you still looking at my seat? And now you have to be quiet and open. I said page 37 in your notebook. This is important. I'm going to give you 1 point for having 37 written in the top right corner of your single subject spiral notebook, along with the essential question, language objective, and the five examples that I did today with the four practice questions. Please do that now. Like, that is your grade. Like, what? Where is the value?
Yeah.
You're valuing compliance. You're not valuing understanding, and yeah. and building understanding and building like belief in yourself. That's messy. That is loud. That is people walk into your room and think, what the heck is going on here? But then they talk to the students and they realize, oh, they're in it. They're in it to win it. And that's like where I think it's at. And that shouldn't have been a comma. That should have been a period.
There we go. Yeah. And I'll just state the obvious again. There was an activity that we were doing with my students, and it involved a map and a spreadsheet and data analysis. And it's basically a gerrymandering like exercise, but they're taking real data and they're creating 14 districts in North Carolina, and they have to assign different counties to the different districts, and you
so
can.
Like, how would you get this state to swing red? That kind of thing. Like, is that
yes?
The point of the
so, but I randomly assigned them red, blue, and purple. You know what I mean? And so your assignment is either to make it like out of the 14 districts, you have to have more red or more blue or more purple. And we kind of talked to a socialized teacher. There's something called packing and cracking. You know what I mean? And so just kind of get off on a tangent. This can, if this doesn't lead to the bigger part of the conversation, then we can go back here, but I'll kind of break down the thing. But you have to have between 600,000 and 1.2 million people in a district, right? And I kind of help them understand that, like, I break it down into 6 and 12. So let's say you can either have between 6 and 12 people in a district, and there's 12 Democrats and 12 Republicans. Well, if you want the Republicans to win, you put all 12 Democrats in one district and you take the 12 Republicans and split them up into 6 and 6 and make two districts. And now you've got a 2-to-1 ratio and you've followed the letter of the law. Right.
Yeah.
And so so they're doing that with like actual data from North Carolina based on the way the last election went and who voted and how many people live in these things and all of that. Now I forget where I was going.
Something
with
about
that.
Probably angry parent emails or something about politicizing your
classroom? No. what was I going to say? Oh, so, but like I said, there's a paper map and then there's a spreadsheet, right? And on the spreadsheet, all the things are in alphabetical order. And on the paper map, all the counties are all over the place. They're not in alphabetical order, right? And then when you put them in the spreadsheet, I've got all these equations set up so that things turn green and yellow if you've got not enough people or enough people, and red or blue or purple if based on the Democrats and Republicans and all these little bells and whistles. And I create a little dashboard at the top of the spreadsheet that turns blue, you know, because you got to go deep into the spreadsheet, but the dashboard will tell you like what your count of red districts and blue districts and purple districts are. But like, so I'm explaining this to the kids and I'm like, so this is like me explaining swimming or driving to you. You know what I mean? I'm like, I can explain that to you and even like maybe do some things in front of you. But until you get in the car, until you get in the pool, it like that's when you're actually going to learn what swimming and driving is. You know what I mean? I can give you some vocab. And I think that's what education about being a teacher is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is swimming lessons outside the pool.
Yeah.
And once you get in, now, oh, oh, this is exactly how, oh, I'm sinking. I didn't realize this. I mean, I know you said I could sink, but I didn't realize what, you know what? Oh, now when I kick, this happens. Oh, I get that. I can actually feel the water and see myself move. And yeah. So I think like it is really tough. And then once they've been in the water, I think that's when you have those conversations with educators and they completely understand what you're talking about now when it comes to various little nuances and things. Okay, if you just do this, if you just breathe every time, you blah blah blah. So it is tough to teach teachers how to teach without them being in the school. So mm-hmm. I went way around to get that, but no, I'm really kind of proud of my little my lesson. It's really cool and really fun. I love it way more than the kids do.
You can buy for $5 on TPT, right?
That price is low. I want that now. I'm buying.
Okay. Remind me, and I honestly will send you a link to all the stuff. And it's pretty cool. So
I think
Now. The next bullet point is funny stories from the classroom. Okay, so this is why you tune in, boys and girls. This is why you stick around till the end so that we get some kind of podcast algorithm, get people listening longer, whatever it is. So we love funny stories from the classroom. So please regale us with some of your anecdotes, sir.
Okay, so I got two. One is from my very first year of teaching. Mm-hmm. I had a single sixth grade class, and I had a student in that class. I swear to you, she looked just like Dakota Fanning, okay. Like unbelievably like Dakota Fanning.
Yep.
And this is like early 2000s. So like literally like Dakota Fanning on film at that time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I had a student whose name is, I mean, I can say his name because he's now like plus 30 plus now, but okay. His name was Nick Cannon.
Nice.
But he was white, short, and rotund at that
nice.
Point.
Nice.
He has found me since on Facebook, and he is athletically fit beyond me, and I am jealous. But hey,
go Nick
Cannon.
That
point, I know. At that point, he was my little, I'm going to throw things at people. I'm going to like needle you. I'm going to say uh-huh. things under my breath. And he took it upon himself to throw pieces of paper at Dakota Fanning. I forget her name, but he was throwing pieces of paper at Dakota. Uh-huh. And unknown to Nick, she played softball. Uh-huh. And so she took it on the head a couple of times because she was just relaxing. And then he was leaning back in his chair, tossing paper at her. She just whips around, grabs the paper out of thin air, just like whoosh, grabs the paper. And in one motion, just rifles it right back at his chest. And it hits him square in the chest. And he's leaning back in his seat. And of course, his hands go back, his feet go up, and he just falls over. And
so, nice.
As a professional, I cannot laugh.
Yes.
As a teacher, I must ridicule this behavior.
Right.
But in that moment, I laughed out loud. The whole yes. class laughed at him. And I was like, bro, you learned your lesson.
Yes. Yes.
And everyone lost their mind. And it was yes. probably the beginning of like giving myself permission to laugh in mm-hmm. the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one.
Yes.
Here's two. So seventh grade, years later, like halfway through my career, kid walks into my room and he's like holding his backpack tight to his back. And kids are talking to him in hushed tones and things are happening. And I'm like, I never catch anything, but I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And you know, your radar's
yeah.
up.
Oh, something shady's going on. Yeah. They're just, everyone's looking over their shoulder. Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm looking around from the board. I'm like, what's going on? Right. Then a girl grabs his backpack and just yanks it off his back. And the top zippers were open a little bit. So the whole backpack just opens and everything inside the backpack cascades out across the floor. Hundreds of condoms. In various colors, in clear packaging, clearly from a health center somewhere.
Yeah, there you go.
So a seventh grade guy was selling condoms to his friends.
Oh, my God. Oh. Yes.
And you kind of went over, you like, entrepreneurialism. There it is. Good job.
It is entrepreneurialism. Yes.
First, I laughed. And second, I was like, well, I mean, you can get those for free if you really wanted to at our school health center.
Yes. Yes. I'd be like, what are you selling, snow tires to people in Florida?
I fell out into the hallway because this is the end of the period. I fell out into the hallway, literally onto my back, laughing so hard. I could not contain myself. Wow. And the other teacher came around the corner, looked into my room as the students are all sitting there going like, and we all just died of laughter. People must have thought that like just someone sprayed like laughing gas everywhere in that hallway. I called his mom. She was okay. She was the one that worked at a Planned Parenthood center, and so he was just being very entrepreneurial. But I mean, on the grand scheme of things, it can't be bad, right? Like painful,
Yes.
but it was amazing.
That's pretty, that's phenomenal. Wow.
So this, and
I made him speak first,
whether
ladies and
anything
gentlemen.
came, I was gonna say whether anything came of it or not.
Okay, so the kid got written up. The
Okay.
kid got written up, and it was like we entered it into his, like, online. There was Synergy. We entered it in there. It was on his record, whatever. But I mean, it was just like, just don't bring that stuff to school, and you shouldn't be selling things because that's in the student handbook.
No. But I'm gonna guess
But
that there's at least one young lady that started to look at him a little differently after that day.
it didn't
yeah,
help that
she
he was a
looked.
socially awkward one.
That's so funny.
They're probably looking at him thinking, like, there's a go-getter right there.
Yes. He's an entrepreneur, and in the event that we decide, he's prepared. Okay,
He saw the need and he made it happen.
There you
He made a
go.
profit. There's capitalism at work for us.
Blue sky thinking right there.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So
Wow. I'm curious to know where that kid is now.
I know he's got to be in his mid to late 20s now. Like I do. I am curious, but hopefully successful in his entrepreneurial endeavors.
I don't know. It's so weird to me that, like, I don't know. You know how, like, the students, when they see you outside of school, they're just like, whoa, that's weird. You exist out here? Like, I feel the same way about my students when I see them out in the world. Like, wait a minute, you're something other than a student. So even, like, learning that they get married and have jobs, I'm like, that just feels strange to me. Like, still, I've been doing this almost 20 years.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
I definitely. Well, it
my first encounter with a student outside of school was I was, like, at a grocery store, and this was, like, maybe 2 or 3 years into my teaching career, and I hear someone say, "Oh, hi, Mr. Lawrence," and I turn around, and there's one of my former students, and she's pregnant. And my first thought is, "You can't do that." Then, we had a nice chat. Of course, she's married, and have her first kid on the way. But I just that was my knee-jerk response was like, "You're not allowed to do that." And then, yeah, anyways, I'm getting over it. I'm getting over it, but taking time.
Oh my goodness. So I'm gonna do a bad version of this Emo Phillips joke. Are you guys Emo Phillips
Oh, I
fans? I
love
know I'm
Emo
old.
Phillips.
Okay. So Emo Phillips. So Emo Phillips is like, so I'm walking down the street and I see Charlie from second grade. And I go over and I slap him on the shoulder. Hey, Charlie, you big knucklehead. What's going on with you big stoopy face? And then Charlie, who I thought was Charlie, turns around and looks at me with this strange look that doesn't recognize me. And it was in that moment that I realized Charlie would have grown up too.
That's very Emo Phillips. Yeah, I
Yeah, it's
love
gonna be like we freeze people at certain ages.
Oh,
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
if you don't see someone from your high school,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? You're like, oh, that they look. I assume they're like 17 forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know I'm older. You know what I mean? But of course, they're like I remember them as who they were.
Yeah, you
Then
freeze them in
sometimes
time.
with relatives, I do that too. You know what I mean? Like,
Oh,
oh
yeah.
yeah, what? You're like 30, married, and blah 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 now. Oh, like, no, you're 16, which was the last time I saw you.
Beautiful.
All righty. Well, Brian, we really appreciate you coming on and just thanks so much. And follow Brian on Twitter. If you have questions about the ungrading and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? You need some math coaching, definitely. Whatever it is. You need some condoms, he's your guy. So as we always say at the end of every episode, stay unprofessional.